Monday, everyone. I'm Pam Stack, your host, and you're listening to Authors on the Air. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Tonight, I have award-winning author and best-selling author Kendra Elliott with me. Kendra always thought she was going to write a romance book, but ended up having so many dead bodies in it, I guess she realized that contemporary romance was not the way she was going to go. I can't wait for you to meet her. She's a lot of fun. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Much for being with me tonight. I'm glad you're here. Let me tell you a little bit about Kendra. She told me that she read voraciously as a kid. Laura Ingalls, Nancy Drew, Trixie Belden, and always had a book in her hand. But she today her mysteries are her favorite thing. She likes Lee Child, Karen Rose, Robert Crace, Lisa Gardner, Michael Connelly, Tammy Hoag, all the people I love too. You've heard me mention them over and over again. But she does like a sweeping romance, a historical like Diana Gabaldon, and, you know, maybe a contemporary romance here and there. But anyway, she told me that she started writing when she read an article about NaNoWriMo, which I think is great. I wish I could write a book. You guys know I can't. Her first manuscript, Stronger Than Bone, which was hidden, was a finalist in RWA's Golden Heart contest. She won a Daphne for romantic suspense in 2014, 15, and 16. And her books have appeared on the Wall Street Journal bestseller list 4 times. That's huge, folks, huge. Buried was a 2014 International Thriller Writers nominee for Best Paperback Original and Romantic Time Magazine's Best Romantic Suspense for 2013. We were just talking about where she lives in the Pacific Northwest. It's definitely too cold for me, but I'm happy to welcome Kendra Elliott to the show. Hi, Kendra. Welcome to Authors on the Air.
Hi, Pam. Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad you're here. I have so many questions to ask you. First of all, what is it about green veggies that turn you off?
Oh, boy. You know, it's all vegetables. I never was a fan of vegetables since I was a kid, and my palate has not changed at all. I still, I'll pass them up. You know, I like potatoes and I like corn on the cob, but those don't count as vegetables.
They really don't.
Them in a lot of butter. Mm-mm.
Yeah, those are definitely not veggies in the real world, but that's okay. You know, I got it. It's fine. So, but you do love to drink Mai Tais in Kauai, which I thought was, you know, makes up for it. I mean, Mai Tais, fruit, you know, you might have a lemon
right.
in there or something. Yeah, yeah, it's all good. I understand that completely. So I want to talk about your
first lately
book
I have discovered that I will eat spinach if I throw it in a smoothie and drown it with frozen cherries and chocolate and maybe some sweetener or something. Then I can drink that. So I get spinach that way.
You healthy thing, you. And
that's
you're tiny.
It.
You're a little girl. And I love that. That's so cool. I hate you, but that's very funny. You know, when I was doing my research on you, I thought it was really cute that you wrote that, you know, you were trying to write a contemporary romance, but bodies ended up in your books all the time. Obviously, you discovered that contemporary romance may not have been the way for you to go, but that you were turned on by an article from NaNoWriMo. So tell me about that experience, and why did you say, I can do this?
I don't know. I remember reading the article in the Oregonian here, which is Portland's main newspaper. And it was just very interesting. And I cut it out and I set it aside back when I actually used to get a newspaper and cut things out of the newspaper. I set it aside and I thought about it. I didn't tell anybody. I didn't tell anybody that I was thinking about it. But I was a big Diana Gabaldon fan.
Mm-hmm.
And I reread her books over and over and over. And I always just felt so good after I finished one. I'd set it down and I'd be like, oh, that was just, you know, it was a great ride. It was a great experience. I was immersed and I'm satisfied and happy. And I thought, you know what? I want to do that. I want to be able to provide that experience for a reader. And I thought, well, let's try this NaNoWriMo thing. And I started locking myself in my ex-husband's office, and using his computer every evening for a while. And after a while, he came down. He's like, what are you doing every night? And I finally told him after I'd been doing this for a couple of weeks. And he kind of looked at me and said, okay, yeah, I can see that, because I was such a voracious reader. So
right.
I plowed through and finished a manuscript, and then I did another manuscript, and then it wasn't until my third one was actually the manuscript that sold. And by then, I knew, okay, I am definitely romantic suspense, not contemporary romance. I love the forensics. I love the police procedurals. That was definitely the way I needed to go.
Wow, that's amazing. You know, it strikes me as interesting. When I was looking at all the books you've written, you are exceptionally prolific for not having been writing for all that long. I mean, it's just spectacular. Let's start with your first series. Will you tell me what your first published book was?
It was Hidden, and that's the first book in the Bone Secret series. Everything in the Bone Secret series is forensic-related. There's a different main characters in each one, but I carry over secondary characters, and often secondary characters become the next main character in the books. There's a series of five right now. I plan to come back to it and add another one or two once I get a chance.
Are these novellas or are these full books?
The Bone Secrets, those are full books.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. I do have a novella series I write with Melinda Lee. That's probably what you're seeing, called the Rogue River series. There are 10 of those out, I think. We alternate writing one after the other. Those are about 100 pages apiece, versus my novels, which are closer to 400.
Wow. I mean, that's amazing. What year was your first book published?
July 2012. So book number 11 comes out tomorrow. I've tried to do two a year and throw in a novella here and there.
That's amazing.
You know what? In the romance world, it really, I kind of fall in the middle as far as being prolific. I have friends that write romance, mainly contemporary romance. They can often write a book in a month or two.
I think
suspense takes longer. I think it's a little more complicated. And so I aim for 6 months. I can do the actual writing in 3 or 4 months, but I usually like to take the other 2 months to do some research and work on my edits from the previous book.
So let me ask you this. I consider you a mystery thriller writer, because to me your books are very suspenseful. Do you consider yourself romantic suspense, though?
I definitely lean more suspense. I would say the earlier books were probably 70% suspense and 30% romance, and it's probably gone down even more. It's still really important to me to have a relationship developing between the two main characters. I think that just adds
sure.
to a lot of conflict, and it's interesting. People like to know what's going on with, you know, in other people's lives, and I will always have that part, and I will always end with a happily ever after, or a happily for now is what I call it. Especially when you're writing a series with recurring characters,
sure.
you just throw little roadblocks in their way. But at the end of the book, everybody will be happy and the bad guy will get his due. I don't do cliffhangers or have the villain disappear.
Now, you have stated that you love the forensics of it all. How do you come by your forensic knowledge to use in your book? Now, I know that this is fiction, and so you can play with it however you wish, but you've got to have some basic knowledge about that. Tell me what you do for research for forensics.
Well, with the first book, with Hidden, my main character is a forensic odontologist. Basically uses teeth to help identify bodies.
Right.
I was a dental hygienist for 16 years and had stared at a lot of teeth, and I had taken odontology classes also because I found that fascinating, and they actually do use a lot of hygienists to do identification too. So I went with that, and I did a lot of, it was mainly book and online research. But a lot of it I already knew. And then when I moved on, I've also written, I've had main characters that are medical examiners. I had one that was a forensic nurse. I found a nurse down south of here about 2 hours. I went down and interviewed her in person. And a lot of her experiences turn up in Chilled, which was my forensic nurse book. Let's see, what else have I written about? It gets fuzzy when you turn out two books a year.
Yeah.
Remember.
Well, let's talk
about
Immortal Truth.
I get emails about certain characters, and I'm like, who are they talking about? I have to go back to the
don't
book
you
and
do...
look. Like, oh, yeah, I did.
Okay, so I have two questions, and that just brings to mind. So you have the Bone Secret series, and you've got six books in there, and then you've got Rogue River series that you've got – eight books in that one, the novella series. You don't use the same characters over and over, but your ancillary characters are carried from one book to the other. They may end up with their own book. Do you not keep a writer's Bible of some sort or a character Bible for all of your books, or do you have to go back and read the most recent one just to remember where you left off? Because you're very prolific, and you have so many books in the series, in each series.
Right. And I have found that a book will typically take 35 to 40 characters. And, I mean, even if they just appear on a page for one paragraph, you know, they still have a name,
right.
they have a profession, you have a visual
sure.
for them. I think it was my third book that I realized I need to keep better track of that sort of thing, and I actually hired someone to go through, read my books, write up a Bible for each book, and she did that for me for quite a while, and when she couldn't do it anymore, I had a fan who was really interested in doing it, and she did a couple for me, but by then, I was doing it simultaneously as I wrote, and so I was keeping my own notes by then. I'm much better.
That's
Scrivener,
probably a good thing.
A fantastic software
program
writing
for
program
writers.
Is good for keeping
yes.
that sort of thing.
Right. I want to talk about your new book, the one that releases tomorrow. It's called A Merciful Truth. This is the new book in the Mercy series. Mercy is an FBI agent, Mercy Kilpatrick. And she is an Oregonian, but she has a very interesting backstory. So would you tell a little bit, just a brief synopsis, maybe the back jacket of this book, so we know a little bit about her and this particular story, please.
Yeah. So Mercy Kilpatrick was raised in Central Oregon, and Central Oregon has a lot of very rural areas. It's a lot different from the Portland area. And so I made her family be preppers or survivalists.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was raised in that kind of environment, pretty much anti-government. We do things ourselves. We rely on ourselves. We don't need the government type thing. When she has a fight with her family, when she's 18, she leaves home. And she eventually ends up at the FBI Academy. And where the very first book opens, she has been an FBI agent for 5 or 6 years, and she ends up on a case back in her hometown. And she hasn't spoken to her parents in years. She hasn't spoken to any of her family in years because they didn't want to have anything to do with her. And now she returns to town, and here she is a government official. She is law enforcement for the government. And it just it made such nice conflict to set up with her, between her and her family. Because she still has, being raised as a prepper, she still worries about what if. What if we lose a power grid? What if there's a natural disaster? What if there's horrible disease that takes out that sort of thing? And so she can't stop herself from being prepared. But it's kind of her dirty little secret. She doesn't tell it. None of her friends know that she does that because she's kind of ashamed about it. But anyway, so the first book, she ends up back in her hometown, and there's a mystery and a suspense and all sorts of things going on there. And then the second book, she has actually joined the FBI office in that town for good. And what starts off as a series of arsons around her town becomes an FBI case once some police officers are murdered during a bigger arson. And once again, I throw in lots of conflict with her family. Her love interest is the small town police chief. And, I can't say that. That's a spoiler. Trying to think what else I can say that won't spoil the story.
Well, you don't have to say anymore. So this is, but here's the thing that I noticed. When I started reading your book, you don't creep slowly into the story. I mean, you start off the very first few pages where, boom, there's this huge fire, and boom, two deputies are murdered.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's on the scene. So there's no moss under your feet as a writer. Your conflict begins immediately. And I have to tell you, there are some books that I read that they work up to that. And while that's very satisfying read, I like the fact that you jump right into the story and set up the whole thing. I'm now ready to read every word on the page when an author does that. So kudos to you. And just
yes,
by
I'm
the
a
far,
firm believer
have,
in hook 'em on the first page. I've always
tried
to follow that advice.
It's a smart thing to do. As a reader, you know that if you're not invested immediately, then there are so many books out there to choose from that you're going to move on to something else. So it's a lovely thing that you did from a reader's standpoint. Are you published by Montlake, by the way? Or are you independently publishing? You are. I was going to say, Your cover art is amazing. Amazing. Your cover art is so well branded to you. It's just fantastic. So congratulations on that. I like the folks at Montlake very much. For those of you who don't know,
to get there on the covers.
Is
had
it really?
Some covers
How much
that,
input do you have?
Oh, a lot. I have so much.
Oh,
it's
good.
So nice. I can veto a cover. I can make suggestions for a cover. They really listen to me. Sometimes they'll get a cover right on the first try, which it's kind of rare, but it has happened. But a lot of times we'll go through 7 rounds of going back and forth, trying to get it right, and me rejecting covers. But, I'm really happy, especially with the Merciful Truth cover. I think that one stands out really nicely. And then they just on Friday, they finished the cover for the third book in the series and put that up on Amazon. I think
it's
gorgeous too.
Yeah. Oh, it's beautiful. All of them are. And you know, you can tell the series, the differences in the series. And so that's really nice, too, to be able to look and see the differences. I'm particularly fond of the Bone Secret series covers. I like them.
Mm-hmm.
They're just enough difference between them, but that you still say, wow, this looks like a Kendra Elliott book, and you can really tell. Very well done. Let's talk a little bit about research. You said you do, you read books, and you do a lot of online stuff. And you have done some interviews, but I also saw a picture of you firing a weapon. I don't know if it was a gun or a long gun. So
yeah.
Are you a markswoman? Is this something that is in your life normally, or did you do this to get a feel for what your characters might do?
The first thing I did, I'm trying to remember when it was, a friend of mine and I, we took a women's handgun class at the county sheriff's office. It was an all-day course. So that was my first step, just to understand what it's like to actually shoot a gun. And then I suspect one of the pictures you saw, it was either me at the FBI Academy at Quantico.
Yes.
I got to do a tour there in, was it 2009? I think it was 2009. I got to do a tour there.
Right.
We also toured the CIA building. But the
FBI
one, they let us play with their guns. And it was kind of amazing. Yeah, I got to shoot, you know, fully automatic weapons. It was kind of fun. And then every year now, I also do the Writers Police Academy. I'm actually one of their sponsors because I think they're just so fantastic and so important for writers to get in there and rub shoulders with real law enforcement and hear from the law enforcement. And you also get to play with guns at that one, too. They had a
Do you do this at your local police department?
The Writers Police Academy?
Yeah.
That's a national conference.
Ah.
It's put on by Lee Laughlin. It's been in Wisconsin the last couple of years, and it's not just for writers. There's a lot of people there that are just fans of law enforcement or fans of books in general, and it's amazing. I spend most of my time watching the instructors. You pick up on how they talk. You pick up on what they say. You study their body movements because they do different things. And it's they are definitely cops. They really stand out and they act differently than anyone else. So that's what I'm usually listening to and paying attention to instead of explosives instruction or something like that.
Sure. Interesting. I think that every conference I've ever gone to, when there is a law enforcement panel, that is always a packed house. Always.
Yes.
And because don't you think there's going to be someone who we were talking earlier about the emails you get. But sure enough, there's going to be some law enforcement person who's going to read your book and say, no, that's not the right gun. It doesn't do that. Or, no, that's not what happens, or there's no safety, or there's no clip, or there's no this, or no that. So you really have to know this stuff because they call you on it, don't they?
Do. And I have, every time I get a letter from law enforcement, you know, because the first thing they do is identify themselves in the first line. And so I'm immediately cringing, going, oh, God, what did I do wrong? But they've all been so positive. No one has ever said to me, you got this wrong. I do try not to be really specific in things.
Right.
I find
just in case you gotta hedge your bets, girl.
She pulled her weapon. You know, she pulled her weapon.
Right.
Then no one's gonna complain about that. Hopefully.
Right. Right.
But yeah, I have heard from several law enforcement that have read my books, and they've said, "Yeah, you're doing it right." And so that's made me feel
good. How wonderful. That's great to hear.
Yeah.
Now, Another thing, I want to just take a moment here and let everybody know. I'm speaking to the magnificent Kendra Elliott about her books. If you'd like to call in and say hi to Kendra, please do. The number is 347-633-9609. That's 347-633-9609. The switchboard is open. First caller is going to get a new book. I love your website. We talked about that. Kudos to Mr. Kendra for doing a good job, all things considered. I love on your page that you did an FAQ. A lot of writers don't do that, but it's a really important thing, I think. So, but I love, I beg your pardon, the last two questions. The first one is, will you read something I wrote and give me feedback? You are not the first writer to tell me that on this show, that people are always saying, look, I wrote this really great story, and I'd love for you to read it. And but you kind of spell it out. You say, nope, can't do it. I don't want to read anybody else's stuff. And it's also a legal protection. I like that you do that. Did you decide to put that up on your FAQ because it was a recurring theme? Was it happening to you often?
It didn't happen a lot, but it happened enough that I felt I needed to say something, because I always felt like I was being a horrible bitch by turning people down. But I would explain to them, you know, why. Plus, I am the last person you want to critique your work, because I am so critical. I see everything, and I think it's hard for me to almost respect another author's voice. I don't want to destroy their voice. I don't want to be the person who gave them such negative feedback that they quit writing forever or they changed something. When my book, I think it was Chilled, my agent and my editor both gave me advice on this book, and it was totally different. And I realized, okay, you know, these are both women I respect. I know their stuff, but one is saying this, this one's saying this. Which one is right? And they were both right. But it was just what advice I might offer someone. I don't want to give someone the wrong advice. I don't want to screw anything up for anybody.
Yeah, it's hard
I take criticism to heart.
Well, it's probably very difficult because you have your own point of view on things, and the way somebody else is writing. Listen, when they're starting off, let's face it, no people are coming out of the chute, and very few. It's a rare breed when they're coming right out of the chute on the debut novel and writing something so spectacular. Joey Day is one guy who wrote IQ, came first book out, and it was just brilliant. But there are a whole lot of them that happen, you know, like
I
that.
I hate those
people. Yeah, there are those that it's happened to, but it doesn't happen often. And so, you know, and if you're in the middle of writing, I'm sure the last thing you want to do is pick up somebody else's work or have their book in your head, particularly if the book is good. You just don't need to have that there. You need to have your own thought process going on. The second thing you talk about is, do your books have sex and profanity? The reason this is of interest to me, because we have a newsletter that we send out monthly. It's a very short newsletter. We spotlight one of the authors or one of the hosts in the network, and we have one of our book reviewers blogs for us, and she said that she wrote a blog either last month or the month before about how she loves to read romance, but there are no warnings when the sex scenes are very explicit, almost erotic, and when there is language. And she said she's offended by that. She said, I should not have to buy a book that I'm not comfortable reading. Why isn't there a warning from the author or the publisher or the bookseller that there is explicit sex and a lot of cursing in there? So how do you fall on that side of the argument? Because you're first to say, yeah, there's cursing in my books because that's how people speak. There's sex, but it's not explicit sex, which is fine. But if someone poses that question to you and you were, you know, you had a very explicit sex scene, would you want to notify readers? Do you think that's a fair warning?
It's a really hard area.
Yeah.
You know, you think of movie rating systems. You know, I've seen people say, why don't they do this for books? But I think it's so subjective, they can't do it. Not all my books have sex in them. And the ones that do, it's one scene. And it's not explicit at all, I don't think. And as far as the swearing, what's normal to some people is absolutely profane to others.
It's true.
I can think of one woman, she goes through and blacks out the words in my book. She reads it, but she blacks them out.
Well, good. I mean, if that works for her, she likes
your
book.
I thought that was amusing.
I think that's funny and good for her.
They can say, and sort of, what if a reader really has a problem and is worried what they're going to expect? You got to read the reviews. I mean, if you read a few reviews on Amazon, you will get an idea of what you're going to come across. A lot of reviewers are very specific about letting people know, oh, by the way, this book, yes, they curse. Yes, there's 15 sex scenes in this book and that sort of thing.
Right. Very explicit.
But they don't have a label they can put on the covers yet.
So let's talk about reviews. Your books have got overwhelmingly great reviews. You know, good for you. I think that's amazing. When did you get, and what book did you get your first one-star review on?
Oh, first book.
First book?
Probably within the very first few days. I honestly don't remember it, but it was probably, oh, I didn't like this book. Oh, I hated this book type thing. But, you know, it doesn't say anything. It was just a subjective opinion. I didn't like this book. You know, a lot of those reviews, they don't say why. Yeah. If they would say,
and that's okay.
Wow, I hated the
main character.
Said
why,
he was too
to
live.
Oh, there you go. Okay. So I look at reviews before I just get tons of books every week from authors and publicists and all the houses and everything, because I love to read. I'm like you. I'm a voracious reader. I read about 400 books a year. I don't own a television, so that gives me plenty of time to read. Yeah. But the interesting thing to me is I was going to check out a book that someone had recommended to me, and I went to Amazon. I generally don't go to Goodreads. I will go to Amazon, though, and I noticed that the overwhelming reviews, out of the 1,000 reviews, there was one one-star review. And the review was an ugly review. It was an ugly two or three sentences. And so I clicked on the reviewer's name, and I went through and looked, and every single book was a troll review. And so I told her that. I commented. And I normally never say anything, but it's disheartening to me. People don't recognize, if you don't like a book, just let it go. Don't review it and don't recommend it, you know. So I told her, you're a troll. You've never liked any of the books you read. Why are you reading in this genre? Essentially, which is unlike me. I normally don't do things like that. But your reviews are outstanding. And obviously, you're a best-selling author. You know, I'm sure that when Merciful Truth launches tomorrow, and by the way, if you have if you are a Kindle Unlimited member, you know, it's there, and the book is only $4.99. So go and get Kendra's book. You're going to love it. And check out the rest of them, by the way. But you overwhelmingly have fantastic reviews, so congratulations on that. Do you ever learn anything when you read your reviews?
I don't read my reviews.
You
learned
never have?
With my first book. I probably read the first 30 on my very first book, and I realized I could not have those voices in my head They were affecting how I wrote. They were changing how I wrote. And I finally realized, you know what, these reviews are for readers. They aren't for the author. If a reader has something they want to tell me, they'll email me, they'll contact me on Facebook or Twitter and tell me, you know, what how they thought of the book, that sort of thing, good and bad. But I found that, I couldn't read my reviews because I would read, you know, 25-star reviews, but I'd read that one star, and guess which one sticks in my head? The one that says, I use too many adverbs or something like that. And so I'm writing along, and I'm deleting every single adverb. I just can't. So, and it's funny some reviewers email me their review and because they want me to see it. And so I'll open it on my computer screen, and I'll close one eye, and I read it really carefully and really gingerly because I'm, like, nervous that they're going to tear me to pieces. But usually if they're sending it to me, it's usually a positive review. But I can't read them. I just can't. And I've been a much happier author since I stopped reading my reviews long ago.
You're so
funny. I'll peek at the first few that pop
so
up there.
Funny.
I know they're usually my diehard fans are usually the ones that get their reviews up right away. So I usually peek at them. And, you know, just to get an overall feel of what they thought of the book.
I like the fact that you you're very loyal to the authors that you like. You like Lee's work. Lee's a terrific gentleman, but he's a very good writer. And I like all the people that you like, too. I think that they're amazing. You know, we have very much the same taste. I just read across genre, so a lot of different genres, as a matter of fact, but that's all good. Tell me whose book you're reading right now, Kendra.
So I turned in a novel about 10 days ago, and during the last 2 weeks of that and for the 10 days since, I have been plowing through about probably 8 of Lisa Kleypas's historical romance.
Oh, yeah, really?
My brain needed a break. And it's just, it's comforting to my brain, I think. I'm not dealing with murder. I'm not dealing with blood spatter.
Right, right.
And it's just, they're just relaxing. So I've been hitting a lot of historical romance lately. I'm kind of worried that I'm going to end a series of hers. I'm going to have to go look for something else. I don't like it when I end a series.
That's so funny. You're a fan of Robert Crace and Michael Conley also, and I think
mm-hmm.
they're amazing. I've had the honor of speaking to Robert Crace, who I think is brilliant, and have met both he and Michael Conley and Lee and wonderful people, wonderful writers. I think I have every book they've all ever read, and Jeffrey Deaver is another one of my favorites. Terrific guy. I have a lot of favorites, but I have a lot of books too. I promise you I was only going to talk to you for 30 minutes, but I'm going to ask you to indulge me to do something called Final Five, which is 5 quick questions and 5 quick answers. Are you game to play?
Okay. Absolutely.
Okay, well, it's also called Stump the Author, but we'll see how well you do. In the meantime, please tell everyone where they can find you on the webs, okay?
Where they can find me, did you say?
Yep. Yes. Well, we can find you on
you
the
mean
internet. On the internet.
Where I am looking and shopping, or where they can find information about me?
Well, your information, your website, your Facebook, your Twitter, whatever it is.
You don't want to know that
I'm
on shopping on the Gap and White House Black Market and that sort of thing. Okay.
Well, I will tell you that the White House Black Market has their main office is about 3 miles from where I live. So just to let you know that.
Yes,
so,
I do get shipments from Florida.
Yeah, there you go. Yep. So just to tell you, I know where they are, and they have an outlet store right next to them, a discounted store.
Ooh,
where
nice.
all the shoes are like $10 and all the dresses are like $20. It's really amazing.
Wow.
So just
that's
you know
amazing.
Food for thought if you want to come to Sanibel Island sometime. I'm 20 minutes from there, and I'll take you to the outlet store, okay? But
nice.
Anyway, tell us where we can find you on the internet, please.
So back to my website, KendraElliott.com. I'm also on Facebook, all the time at Kendra Elliott, author Kendra Elliott. You can find me on Twitter at Kendra Elliott. I also do Instagram at Kendra Elliott. I think that's about it. I have a Goodreads page. I'm not very active on Goodreads, but I respond to Facebook questions probably within a couple of hours at the absolute most. Email by the next day.
That's amazing. So you have two cats and two dogs. So I can't ask you which you prefer. What are your pets' names, please? What are the cats' names?
The cats are Paris and Bear, and my dogs are Max and Liesel.
Okay. Well, none of that makes any sense to me, but that's good. You know, it works for me. My cats are all named after food, so.
Well, Liesel is our newest member of our family. She is a four-month-old Pomeranian, and
oh my God,
she's so hyper. She gets us up in the middle of the night,
too.
Do you
know Janita
Lowe? It's like having a new
baby. Janita Lowe has Pomeranians, too. She's so funny.
And a million
cats. 11 cats.
Yes, I know.
Yes. Yes. She's a riot. She lives real close by to me, too. She lives in Central Florida. I'm in Southwest Florida. But a dear friend. Yeah, I know. She's crazy with all the animals. The, you know, the raccoon, the squirrels, and all that other kind of stuff.
The squirrel,
oh,
yeah.
God.
I want to say
yeah,
she calls
Mickey.
One of her dogs Demon Dog or something like that.
Demon Dog. Gigolo, Demon Dog, and I can't remember what they all are. Oh, she talks about them all the time. She's a riot.
Yeah.
That girl is totally twisted. But you got to love her. Anyway. So, what would we be surprised to learn about you that you don't have in your bio on the web?
Let's see. I am so boring. I just did my ancestry.com thing where they check your genetics, and it came back
right.
So boring. It was all
I don't believe
British
that.
And Irish. And that was it. You know, there wasn't any, you know, Asian or African or Native American in there anywhere. It was exactly boring. So something interesting about me.
So, well,
yeah,
would
I
be
got a D in a
poli
sci class once. I got a D in my political science class in college.
You're so
I
funny.
Think I got fired from. What did I get fired from? Oh, my first job, I got fired. I was a restaurant hostess. I didn't smile enough was his reason for firing. So, you're making
that's
me
so
dig
funny.
Here.
I really am. Okay, that's enough. You don't have to tell me. If you had to read, I don't know if you have books that you're good. Books that once a year, no matter what, you have to read them. Do you? Are you like that? You have a go-to book that just brings you so much joy that you want to read it over and over again?
I also have to say Diana Gabaldon's series. I read,
yeah,
especially the first five books. I'll reread those over and over. When I was younger, well, probably up till about age 30, I would say I reread my books all the time because, well, I wasn't writing, and so I had time to read, but I couldn't keep myself in new books, and so I would just reread all the time. But and I don't do that anymore. Lack of time, I think.
Is writing a joyful thing to you? Is it fun for you when you write?
It's not. It is so hard for me. A lot of authors will tell you, oh, I have a million ideas and I can't get to them all. When I sit down to write a book, I have one idea and I had to rack my brain to come up with that idea. It's very difficult. And I make myself write 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. And by the time I'm done, I'm exhausted. It's really, really, really a brain strain on me. And so I think that has taken the joy out of it a little bit. And there's always, you know, there's more pressure now to up my game from the previous
sure.
book. I have to write something different than I wrote before. It doesn't get easier with each book. A lot of authors will say, yeah, each book gets a little bit harder because, yeah, you got to change things around. You can't keep writing the same thing over and over. But I'm so lucky to do what I do. I've been a full-time writer since my first book came out. I quit my job, I think, 3 months before it came out. I had saved up 6 months of pay, and I was going to give this writing thing a try, but I was ready to go back and look for another job if it didn't pan out. But so for the past 5 years, yeah, all I've done is write full-time, and I'm home with my kids. My husband works from home, and so we can travel when we want to. It's just added a lot of flexibility to my life. It's really nice.
What do you feel when you put the end? When you do your little hashtag at the end, your triple hashtag there, you
mm-hmm.
are done. What's the first thing you do?
Well, I just finished. What did I do after I just finished the other book? I'm not a big celebrator. Because you know what? I gotta start the next book as soon as I finish editing the one I finished. I think it's just kind of a relief, but I'm also already stressing about, oh my gosh, I need to come up with an idea for the next book. So my brain immediately goes there, even though I know I'm not gonna start writing it for probably a month or two.
Do you feel compelled to write?
I could stop writing tomorrow and be done and probably never write again. Now I do it for a regular paycheck.
Sure, it's a business.
So it's a job for me now. But yeah, I think I could walk away and not do it anymore pretty easily. I think I'd rather just read. How come they don't pay me to read? Where's the job where they pay you to read?
If they paid me to read, I'd be wealthy, honey. I heard that. I would love that, you know.
Yeah,
me too. I breeze through about 10 books on the weekend, so I get that. So my last question to you is, what do you think, where in our society does fiction have a place, and what is its purpose?
Escapism,
really?
A mini vacation
yeah.
for your brain, a chance to go somewhere you haven't gone before, a chance to just put everything aside. You know, I had 3 kids in 4 years, and I also worked part-time, but books were my escape. They were my time to relax and do something else and really relax my brain.
You do everything kind of really fast, don't you? You have children really fast. You write books really fast. Good for you.
When I start something, I finish it.
There
my husband
go.
Is a what? Starter. I am a finisher. He starts a million projects and doesn't finish them. If I'm going to start something, I will be finishing it because I have a plan to get it done.
It's amazing. Kendra Elliott, I've so enjoyed our conversation tonight. I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your schedule and coming on and chatting with me about all kinds of crazy things. But it's been fun, and I hope one day you'll come back. Perhaps you'll take a turn behind the microphone and invite one of your favorite authors on to the interview, and I'll be your tech. Yeah?
That would be fantastic.
So think about who you want to invite on. I always have time in the studio for authors to have an in conversation type thing, and I'd love to have you come back.
Thank you. Yeah, I had a great time, Pam.
Thanks so much, Kendra. Tomorrow night, folks, I'm going to be speaking to my wonderful friend, Tim Hallinan. He has 2 new books coming out. I have one of them that's not even listed on Amazon yet called Fool's River. It's a Poe Rafferty thriller, and he has another book called Pulped. Excuse me. We're going to be talking to him at 8 o'clock tomorrow night. I hope you join me. Kendra Elliott, you rock, sister. You and I will talk again, okay?
Thank you, Pam.
Have a great night. Good night.
Thanks, you too.
And that's our show for tonight. Thank you for being with me, and thank you, Mom and Dad. Good night.